for months. I needed to consider how he felt, how tired he must be. So after 10 more minutes of staring at the ceiling, I dragged my body out of the comfy bed and made my way to the bathroom. When I flipped on the switch, the lights were bright, too bright for my eyes. I swiped across the switch again and turned on the dim lights on the ceiling. I set them as low as they would go. My cheeks were red in my reflection, as usual, even under the muted light. I hated that no matter how much green primer I slathered across my rosy skin, it was constantly red. I got my mother's skin, as did Amy. I turned on the cold water in the marble sink and sprayed the dark roots of my hair with dry shampoo, raking my fingers through the white powder. I brushed my teeth, secretly hoping that John would wake up before I was dressed. But he didn't, and 20 minutes later, I found myself with a napkin shoved into the front of my cotton sundress, digging my teeth into an authentic Café du Monde beignet, alone. The powdered sugar blew all over my lap, latching its way into my navy dress, but I didn't even care. They were that good. I took a swig of coffee to make it feel more like breakfast and finished the plate in less than 5 minutes. The coffee at Café du Monde was good, and that they only served it two ways made it feel like a luxurious thing. It wasn't like Starbucks, where I ordered a grande iced cafe latte, extra shot, extra ice, please. At Café du Monde, you get two choices, coffee black or mixed with milk. I got it au lait, half coffee, half hot milk. As the minutes ticked on, I got worse and worse at pretending I didn't care that John didn't wake up for me. Should I have tried to wake him up again? I didn't know, so I washed the thoughts away with another gulp of coffee. I was surrounded by people, a tourist group from China, all dressed in crisp, clean clothing, sharing a couple plates of beignets. A little Chinese girl with a bright smile pointed at a pigeon eating from a plate a few feet away. An African-American family wearing matching Merryweather family reunion shirts were getting up to leave, and I watched as a girl with beautiful natural hair, about my age, tapped the shoulder of the waitress and handed her a large tip. A group of teenagers, all mixed races, were laughing and shouting at a table near the back. An old white man ate with a little girl who couldn't be over 5, and a woman who looked like an older version of the little blonde girl. New Orleans was a soup pot of different kinds of people, and I loved it. Military bases were like that too, but they were never as beautifully crafted as a city like this. Government buildings were mostly brown and tan, whereas New Orleans was a complex mix of Creole and American-style houses with lots of color and detail. In the air, I could smell coffee, sugar, cigarette smoke, and the sun all at once. I could see every skin shade, every walk of life while sitting at the little iron table outside Café du Monde. It was still early in the afternoon, so there were more empty tables than I had ever seen, but it was still pretty packed. "You finished, honey?" I looked up and smiled back at the older waiter with a missing tooth. He had something sweet about him. Maybe it was the silver hair and weathered, wrinkly face. He looked like he'd had a rough night for at least the last 400 nights. "Yeah," I slid my plate over to him. He made a tsk sound. "You're gonna waste all that sugar?" His voice was as high-pitched as his hair was gray. He had a paper cap on his head and a white uniform, the traditional uniform of Café du Monde. Since the place never closed, I wondered if his shift had just started or was about to end. My eyes moved to the plate he was taking away and the pile of white powder on the paper. It looked like cocaine, only a little better for you. He folded the wax sheet liner like a taco and grouped the powdered sugar together. It was the same color as his hair. "I'll tell you a little secret," he whispered to me in a conspiring voice. It made me think about when Joe used to wake me up in the middle of the night to go on an adventure. We would sneak out the back door of our house in Texas and pass through the broken gate to get to the community center at the end of our street. I nodded, waiting for the man to share his secrets with me. "A little local secret," his voice went lower again, "is to pour some of this," he gently shook the sugar around, "into that." He pointed to my coffee. A smile broke apart my face, and I told him I would love to try it. After I mixed the leftovers in, I downed the rest of my sweet Olay coffee with the extra powdered sugar, feeling like I belonged in the quarter now that I knew the delicious secret of the insiders. After I slid him a 10, I walked next door to torture myself. I did that often. I was the kind of person who was extremely self-deprecating as well as self-aware. The mix was a circus. When I walked next door, the smell of candied pralines was so strong that I was instantly hungry again. I checked my phone for a text or call from John, but it only showed a voicemail from the concierge at the Ritz. What even? Nothing from John. I would bring him back some pralines. I had already eaten an entire order of beignets. If I ate any more, I would have to change my powdered sugar-dusted dress. There was already a line for Aunt Sally's, of course, so I stepped into the end of it. The woman in front of me had a little dog in a purse, and I made a face at it. It growled, and I jumped back a little, laughing at myself. The woman turned around and gave me an annoyed look. She rolled her sweet little beady eyes at me. She dripped, sticky, honey-dipped southern woman, the kind who would insult you and then follow with, "Bless your heart." Basically, my mom's mom. I knew her type. Her eyes lingered on the white powder on my dress, and I wondered if my pouty lips and expensive eyelashes would let her know I wasn't some worn-down girl in the line for pure sugar on a wax sheet. "If you don't want attention, why carry around a dog in a bag?" I said under my breath. She heard me and huffed, then turned back around. I smelled her Chanel No. 5 and checked for her huge rock, which was indeed decorating her manicured finger. Her ass looked great in the jeans she was wearing, and it made me want to roll my eyes for no reason besides my own pettiness. I spent so many wasted thoughts bringing down other women. I hated to think about how often I had done that when I was younger. Jo and her documentaries had changed my perspective. I'm still not as angry at the world as Jo, but maybe I should have been. The line inside Aunt Sally's was moving pretty quick, and when I made it to the counter to order, I fumbled with my choice between original and chocolate. I wanted both. "Two chocolate, please, and a box of mixed," I finally said after a 2-second pause. I handed the smiling woman my debit card and waited to sign the receipt. I wondered when Shia was going to leave New Orleans, and I wondered if John had plans to meet up with him. This store was full of Shia and the memory of our first meeting, pretty much right where I was standing. There should have been caution tape wrapped around the area, or at least around the man himself. I tried to think about John, my lovely John, would probably be waking up right about now. The night before wasn't exactly the romantic, passionate night I had anticipated, but today was a new day, and I had pralines to bring to the table. When I walked outside, I thought my mind was playing a trick on me. But nope, it was actually happening. Shia King was walking toward me, live and in the flesh, his eyes already on me. I couldn't run or hide. Well, I could, but he would for sure catch me if I did. And I didn't feel like running. This street was big enough for the both of us. But he was the worst possible person for me to bump into at that moment. The literal worst. Even though I knew there was no way in hell he was going to let me walk by without at least a snarky remark, just to make a game out of it, I turned the other way and took a bite of my praline. Before my teeth finished sinking into the caramel, his hand wrapped around my arm. I gently pulled away from his touch, but turned to him. "Do I know you?" I asked with my mouth full. Shia made me lose my manners like no one else. His mother would be horrified by my classless chewing with caramel stuck to my teeth. He started laughing, but there was no noise. His body shook lightly, and he shook his head, his white smile so big, and his teeth sinking into his bottom lip. I always lost my breath when he did that.
"Really?"
He tucked his chin down a little and raised a brow at me. I held my breath now, though, because he was engaged to Belle Gardner. Bell Gardner, out of all people. Not sure. I took another bite and started to walk away. I knew he would follow me. You look like my friend's fiancé. He popped up next to my shoulder. Is that chocolate? I jerked away the praline before his fingers could grab it. Maybe. What can I help you with, Shia? So you do know my name after all? Like I said, I believe you're engaged to my friend. People were all around us, a couple pushing a set of twins in a stroller. The twins were wearing matching boat hats on their little potato heads. One of them made eye contact with me and smiled, and I smiled back at him. His smile made me a little sad, but he was so charming. Don't think I am, Shia said. The baby I thought I was having a moment with started crying hysterically. I continued walking. Shia laughed next to me, then said, Anyway, this is a coincidence. What are you doing in the quarter? He was walking next to me, but backward. The sun was so bright that I had to squint a little when I looked at him. He was wearing an earthy green t-shirt, and Joe's poetry book came to my mind again. The one that says, A little more human than the rest of us. Shia's facial hair had grown out a little more than I was used to. It had made him look older than he was. I had never seen him in person with the beginnings of a beard, only on Facebook. When he was home, he always kept it shaved. Minding my business, you? He laughed without noise again. I can't say the same. I tried not to laugh. What do you want, Shia? Where's Bell Gardner? His smile didn't falter, not even a smidge. Working. Where's John Brooke? Touché, asshole. I didn't look at Shia. Sleeping. Say, I didn't know bars were open so early on a Sunday. Or maybe you have a connection? I hoped my words annoyed him as much as I wanted them to. He was lucky I was even speaking to him. At least, that's what I was trying to convince myself. Ha ha, Meg, don't be jealous. It's not a good look on you. I almost bumped into a man carrying an ice cream cone, and he cursed at me under his breath when he had to basically jump out of my way. How was it that Shia was walking backward and he didn't run into anyone? He was too casual. Even the staple look he wore, and wore well, a t-shirt that said Manila on the front with a colorful bus under the word, black gym shorts with a Nike check, of course. He must have had those shorts in every color. Shia was being so... Shia. I'm not jealous, I denied. I focused my eyes on a passing taxi van full of rowdy men, and they shouted something gross to a group of women all dressed in the same shirts. Only one was different. It said bride on white instead of bride's bitches on black. The women shouted back, and I looked at Shia. Gross, he remarked. His eyes followed the taxi until it disappeared and we couldn't hear the men shouting anymore. Very. I hoped those women were going to be careful in a city full of taxi vans, full of men, full of frozen liquor slushies. I hated that part of the quarter. I loved the rich culture and the food and the music. New Orleans held so much beauty outside of Bourbon Street. I dreamed of living in a townhouse in the heart of the quarter. I would have to wait until my husband and I retired, as I figured I would spend most of my life on a military base. Wait, why are you here? Aren't you supposed to be gone by now? I asked Shia. We reached the corner of Canal and Decatur and had to stop at the crosswalk to wait for the light to turn. At least half a dozen people were on the sidewalk with us, but it didn't feel that way. They were all minding their own business. I'm staying home a little bit longer. I looked at his face, into his eyes. Why? Is Belle knocked up or something? His smile faded. Really, Meg? You're going to be that immature? I was determined not to say anything. I'm not being immature, I snapped, a little loudly. My eyes bounced from the ground to the people around us, to the traffic on Canal Street. He cracked a smile. Go away, I said, not really meaning it. Nope, he responded, knowing I didn't. I thought you and Belle were friends. Plus, you kept saying I looked like your friend's fiancé. I gaped at him. Friends, you're joking, right? Belle and I were never friends. She was awful in that way where she was a wolf in sheep's clothing. Little passive-aggressive insults like, Meg, I know the best dermatologist if you need one. When I ran into her at the PX with one tiny little pimple on my chin. The only times she had been nice were questionable. She slid me a drink here and there at her work, but even that stopped once my Aunt Hannah got a job behind the bar with her. Reader, Briar, John, and I went out in the quarter each time John came back from New York for leave, but it went from my favorite to least favorite place overnight. Shia smiled. Okay, so maybe not friends exactly. We had resumed walking, I forward and he backward, even on the busy cross street. We were in the center of the quarter, and there was no shortage of people bustling through the warm Sunday morning. But you don't have any reason not to like her. I like John just fine. My hotel was coming up. It was almost a perfect square of a walk back from Aunt Sally's to the Ritz. What was I supposed to do about Shia walking with me? You and John were friends. That's not the same thing. I pulled my phone out of my pocket and checked for something from John. Nothing. We weren't that great of friends, and why do you care who I'm engaged to anyway? Shia shrugged. The green of his t-shirt went so well with his dark skin. He always looked so effortlessly put together, but he was more than his pretty face, as was I. Shia had told me that exact same thing about John once before, that they weren't that great of friends. When I had asked Shia why, he'd only said, "Why do you think?" and opened the door to the black town car that would drive him to the airport that September. There was a time in my life, only months ago, when I felt like I was always saying goodbye to Shia. We were friends, and he was John's friend, too, but it wasn't like John felt a little empty when Shia would leave. Then again, John himself had been in West Point for the last 3 years. My friendship with Shia barely existed compared to my relationship with John, and I saw them each about the same amount of times. Often, I didn't think anything of the small amounts of time I spent with John. I only thought about how he loved me and was much more mature than Shia. Shia and I had barely been speaking lately. I wanted to pretend that I didn't know why. "We've barely talked the last few months," I finally said. I couldn't let him crawl inside my head the way he loved to. He wasn't the kind of guy you just talk to casually, spitting out beige words just like everyone else. He didn't ask about the weather. He asked about your favorite type of storm. His conversations were rainbow-colored, every shade. When Shia King talked to you, he climbed into your mind and took pieces out with him. He didn't ask everyday things like, "How are you?"
Would you have had anything to say to me, Meg?
Last summer, right in front of Jackson Square, he asked me,
"What's the last thing that made you cry?"
I don't know, but I would have liked the choice. We kept walking, and I could see my hotel from where we were. The temperature was rising as the afternoon took over from the morning. He was being silent as he stirred my words, probably searching for an essay of an answer to make my head spin with thoughts I wasn't ready to have. That night in front of that park, famous for artists selling their paintings, something started to grow in the gap between us. I didn't know much about art. I wasn't like Joe or Shia King. However, I could name every shade of tart lipstick and the best type of haircut for your face shape. We all had our talents.
How's your dad?
Hasn't called in a while, I told him. That sticky August night was supposed to have been a normal night of me playing taxi, driving Beth to her friend's house to study, back when she wanted to leave the house, and then dropping Joe off at work. Her last job was at a little coffee and crepe place right across from Jackson Square. I planned to walk around a little and maybe go to the mall, but I saw Shia standing outside the entrance, and I had recognized him from Reader's barracks room. I spent Joe's entire shift telling him about a Facebook post from River. It was a meme about crazy ex-girlfriends because I was the crazy one. Right. He had not only spread pictures of my body that I trusted him with to half of the school, but he wouldn't stop posting stupid quotes about exes. By the time I had spilled half of my guts to Shia, Joe texted me to pick her up from her shift. I couldn't believe how fast the last 4 hours had gone, and I couldn't believe I had gone that much into detail about the bullshit that happened in Texas. I didn't want that part of my life to follow me here to a new state, new life, but there I was, pouring it out on the concrete. Prior to that night, Shia and I had hung out maybe 6 times. Sometimes with John, sometimes with Reader, but never at Shia's house. Always in the barracks rooms. I didn't even know he was part of the Fort Cypress royal family until Reader let it slip one night in the field behind the shopette. But Shia talked his way out of further conversation about it before we even realized that's what he was doing. After I spilled my guts to him like cheap red wine on a white sheet, Shia and I became friends, I guess you could call it. Then we got in a fight that night. I was wearing a tiara on my head. He called me princess and kissed my mouth with cherry lips and a silver tongue. Neither of us wanted that night to haunt us, and then John asked me to take our relationship to the next level. Even during that, I kept hanging out with Shia, and he would try to convince me to leave town with him. He always laughed enough at the end where I didn't know if he was serious or not. His silence now got the best of me, and I turned quickly to him, annoyance spreading through me, and said, "John's in the hotel room waiting for me." Shia's eyes stayed on the busy sidewalk ahead of us, and the light turned for us to walk.
"Liar!"
a voice yelled from the middle of the street. When I looked, a homeless man was standing there, his hands in the air and liquid draining from his full beard. Shia gently tapped my arm for me to keep walking. My frustration bubbled over. "If you're going to ignore me, then get the hell away from me." Shia laughed, and I groaned.
"I'm not ignoring you. I'm thinking before I speak. You should try it."
I rolled my eyes in the most dramatic way.
"I want to see John anyway. I'll come with you,"
Shia offered, waited for me to nod, and followed me to the hotel.
28. Beth. Aunt Hannah called. I told my mom as soon as she walked through the door. The wooden door shut and barely made a sound. It wasn't like our thick mahogany door in Texas that Joe used to throw sharp-pointed ninja stars into. That thing slammed shut every time the wind blew and shook the house with it. The door in this house looked like it was made from birch and could blow away with the wind anytime. Mom set her purse down on the floor and walked over to the fridge. I saw the lines of tension sprout across her forehead, but she kept a straight face. "What did she say?" My aunt had called 3 times before I finally answered, and she sounded like she was covering the receiver. I would have told my mom this if her under eyes weren't the color of my jeans. "That she needs you to call her back?" She sounded stressed out. I paused long enough for my mom to dip her head into the fridge to avoid me. "Is everything okay?" Mom stood up and closed the fridge, a carton of eggs in her hands. Yeah, everything is fine. Did you get all your classwork done? Are you still behind a week?" Classic Meredith Spring, changing the subject even better than Amy. I knew my mom twice as well as my sisters did, so that meant I knew her every move. She didn't have many, but lately she had been cashing them all in. She was trying to distract me by asking for my homework and getting me to talk about myself. "I caught up after Christmas break, remember?" I specifically recalled talking to her about it in the living room. "Oh, yeah." My mom opened the cupboard and grabbed a mixing bowl. She hadn't been in the mood to cook lately, but I wasn't going to bring that up. I didn't mind cooking most of the meals around here, but I was happy taking the morning off. It was almost noon. Joe was upstairs writing in her room, and Meg was with John downtown. Amy was at the house of some girl down the street, so we were alone for the most part. I owed it to my dad to take any time I could to check in on my mom. He hadn't called in days, and her eyes were bloodshot this morning. My mom's blonde hair was pulled back in a claw clip. Her hair was thinning in the front, where she curled the pieces into one big curl around her hairline. Meg always begged her to let her give her a new style, but so far our mom had refused. "How much longer do you have? I should know this." She pulled a smile out of the pocket of her favorite t-shirt. She slept in the t-shirt, printed with my dad's old company name over the image of a tank. It was so worn that the black fabric had turned gray, and the tank had started to peel off. The decal now looked like a house or something, not a tank. "Until May, technically, but I might be able to finish early." My mom popped open the carton of eggs and inspected them. "Your dad has always wondered about next year, and the school sent an email." Her voice fell a little. "My dad wanted me to go to regular school. I knew he did, but he would never just flat out say it."
"What kind of email?"
She took a few eggs in her hands and walked over to the bowl on the counter.
"Just an enrollment email for you, Amy, and Joe. Are you ready to go back to school?"
She stopped talking, and I figured that she was trying to collect her thoughts before she handed them out. She chose the weirdest stuff to treat me like a kitten about.
"Does Dad think I should go back to school?"
"That's not what I said. I said he's asked over the past few months if you were ready to go back."
"Why, though? Is something wrong with what I'm doing now? I'm ahead of schedule now, and I only fell behind one time, and that was over holiday. Joe bombed that math test last week."
"It's not about the grades." Mom began to crack the eggs against the side of the bowl. The eggs broke hard enough that I'm sure a few tiny shells went inside the bowl, but didn't want to point them out. I usually did it at the end, pulling out little shards of eggshell. My mom wasn't great at not getting shells inside, but at least she wasn't like Joe, who refused to look at the eggs. She ate scrambled meat that wasn't real meat and tortilla shells almost every day for breakfast, or the occasional bagel stuffed to the brim with cream cheese. I waited for my mom to explain why I was failing as a teenager.
"It's that you'll be in 10th grade. Freshman year is always tough for sure, but you've had a break. Do you think it's time to try it again? Now that Joe could get you into yearbook with her. You're so smart, Beth."
This wasn't the first time Mom had brought it up, but this time was much more direct than ever before.
"You don't get it. It's not about being smart, Meredith,"
I said accidentally. It threw her off, I could tell. My sisters had picked up Joe's habit of calling her by her name, but I liked to call her Mom. Sometimes I would call her Meredith out of my sister's habit, but I tried not to.
"It's not about me being smart. It's about the majority of the school day having nothing to do with actual school."
"What does that mean?"
I sighed. I felt like I had explained this enough times in the last year.
"Is this about bullying? Because
it's not about bullying, Mom. It's about no one getting that I don't want to be around people the way that Meg and Joe and Amy and you and Dad do. I can't learn with a room full of people. I'm sorry if it's not normal, Beth."
Mom paused. Her tone was unreadable, and her eyes were full of guilt. I didn't ever want her to feel guilty. I just wanted her to see that this wasn't about her.
"I wasn't saying you have to go back to school. I was only bringing it up because of the email. You know what's best for you, okay? I trust you to know what's best for you, and if you want to be homeschooled until college, that's okay."
I knew I was lucky to have the option of staying home. Most parents would have been the opposite of mine and forced me to work through my anxiety, which my parents did try, until I couldn't handle it anymore and started skipping.
"Thank you,"
I sighed, leaning against the counter. I would have brought up that my college would be in home too, but I just wanted the conversation to end. My mom continued to make breakfast until Joe came down with her arms full of newspapers and said Laurie was going to come over later. He had been spending a lot of time with Joe, but I thought it was a good thing. She wasn't good at making friends like Meg and Amy. She wasn't as bad at it as I was, but still.
"What in the world?"
Mom asked, gaping at Joe and her baggage. "I'm looking for something," Joe said, as if that explained what in the world she was doing. The smell of bacon smothered the kitchen, until I added onions to my mom's famous farmer's breakfast. It was a mashup of potatoes, oil, butter, salt and pepper, bacon, sausage, eggs, and cheese. Jo got her own skillet with no meat, and I ate from both. When we had devoured our plates, Jo said, "That was so good. Thanks, guys," and went back to her stack of papers while I started washing the pans. The phone started ringing again, and I hit silence. Seconds later, someone knocked on the door. Jo set down the newspaper she had in front of her face, and my mom stalled a moment before asking me to get it. I hoped it wasn't Aunt Hannah, but when I saw the two officers standing in the doorway, I immediately took back my wish.
29. Meg. I called John twice before Shia and I came back to the Ritz. He didn't answer, and I couldn't just barge into the room with Shia and wake John up. So while we waited for John to come back to life, Shia and I hung out in the hotel's club room, and I somehow found a way to eat more food. The room was actually three rooms, one with an extravagant lunch display set out across a huge banquet table. Meats, cheeses, little finger sandwiches made from cheeses I had never heard of. They had fruit cut into shapes and grapes on sticks. The other two rooms were for sitting. I couldn't count how many couches and recliners filled the space. Inside these rooms, time hadn't moved forward in a while. I didn't know what year the decor was supposed to be representing, but it was definitely some time when people loved floral print everything. Shia and I found ourselves a nice four-person table in the corner next to a flat-screen TV that had to be at least 50 inches. Shia moved a cracker around his plate and scooped some hummus onto it. I didn't know anyone else who loved hummus. I smiled, thinking about how Amy once called it rich people food, and Jo told her to shut up and Google something for once in her life. "How long are you staying here in this hotel? It's nice, right?" Shia popped the entire cracker into his mouth. He chewed quietly. All that fancy southern table training came in handy. I took an etiquette course on post when I was 12, but Shia was groomed since birth to be a gentleman. "One more night," I said, the bottom of my throat on fire. I reached for my water and finished answering his question. "And yeah, I would say so. Look at this space." My eyes bounced around the room and Shia's followed. "You do love shiny things." I snapped my gaze back to him. "And what is that supposed to mean?" My annoyance barely held behind the corners of my smiling mouth. He shrugged. I looked around the room and focused on the hotel employee who was relining the table he had just cleaned with a fresh, crisp white tablecloth.
"Just saying. Do you not?"
Shia challenged me. I saw his eyes flicker from the powder scattered across the chest of my dress. "Not all of us want to throw away our trust funds and not go to college." Shia's eyes bulged and his knee hit the table before I registered that I had really said that. Were we fighting? I had just started a fight, I knew it, but sometimes that was the only way we communicated. What I had just said felt much more personal and a splash too harsh for our usual banter. Such banter didn't entail fighting normally. It was mostly calling each other out on our crap. But it never felt malicious, no matter how many times I told my sisters I hated him.
"Throw away? You literally have no idea what you're talking about. But you just stay up there on that pedestal, Meg. I had a call this morning with my friend in Cambodia, and she told me she removed two girls in 1 month from a whorehouse with the money we raised for her. One of the girls was 12, the same age as Amy, and had been a sex slave for 3 years. My stomach twisted. He continued, "What have you done, besides paint my mom's face on and take her dogs for walks?" I sat there taking in every single word he said, and stirred it and stirred it until my phone rang on the table between us. I somehow found my voice. "I better get that," I said, biting my tongue. John's name flashed across the screen and I swiped to answer. He told me he had just woken up, and when I mentioned Shia, J
John said he was going to work out in the gym, take a shower, then meet us. When I hung up, Shia laughed, but it wasn't snarky.
Work out? He just doesn't stop.
He's been in a routine. I thought he would have at least asked me to come back to the room while he showered or to tag along with him to the gym.
Yeah.
Shia looked up at the TV and rolled his eyes at the screen.
Our country is...
Don't start the political talk. I need more coffee, I groaned. He was like Joe. When you got them going, they didn't stop. I admired it most of the time, even though I wasn't as involved as they were, but not today. My mind went to the 12-year-old girl in Cambodia. I tried to remember if Joe's essay was about the same place.
Fine. How's everything going with you? Did you enroll in that makeup course yet?
I instantly wanted to press rewind. I shook my head and took another drink of water. No, not yet.
Why? It's coming up in what, May?
That he remembered that blew my mind. Of course he did, the honest part of my brain countered. Yeah, I'm sure it's full now. The summer will be busy for me anyway. I didn't know why I'd put off signing up for the course. I'd met an artist when he came into Sephora for the launch of a brand. He told me about a course he was going to in Los Angeles in the summer. The person teaching it was a celebrity makeup artist, and she was supposedly the master of the newest techniques. I wasn't technically trained as an artist, and the course would give me a little more credibility, but it was all the way across the country and expensive.
Are those reasons or excuses?
That was one of Shia's favorite things to ask about anything, from the reason I didn't return his calls to life choices.
Both. What's going on, Meg?
I fidgeted in my chair and looked around the room. It was much less crowded than when we first arrived. Only 4 or 5 people were in the room, and one was an old man who had fallen asleep sitting quite rigidly on the couch with his glasses resting on the tip of his nose. With what? It's just a makeup course. I shrugged and drank the last little bit of my water. Shia had stopped eating, and a server came by to clear our plates. I held on to the crostini on my plate, but Shia had them take his away. He tipped her, too, and I wondered how many people I was supposed to tip but didn't since we arrived. The bellman? The valet? The concierge when they drop off John's clean uniform in the morning?
In life, you're not taking the course you talked about for weeks, and you're working for my mom, of all people?
Shia dragged out the sentence like he needed me to really listen to what he was saying. She pays me well, more than my other job. He had a different relationship with Mrs. King than I did, and no matter how intimidating she was to me, I could only hope to be like her one day. She was everything I wanted to be.
And you're doing what for her, long term? Where is that going to get you?
I didn't respond, so he kept going. He did soften his voice so it didn't escalate the way it could have.
My mom said you're trying to marry John. Is that true?
She said that? The burning in my throat spread up to my ears and cheeks.
Not literally, but she hinted. She was saying how we could throw you a big engagement party.
He paused, but I didn't think he was done talking. I interrupted him anyway. Like your engagement party? He sighed and lifted the bottom of his t-shirt up to wipe his face. A line of his skin peeked out, and I looked at my plate. I wanted to look at him, but didn't want to give him the satisfaction.
A little like mine, but more romantic, more real, I think.
Mm-hmm. I sat back against the cushioned back of my chair. I didn't know how romantic my engagement party would be or why Shia was hinting that his wasn't real, but I didn't want to play this game. A different woman came by with a pitcher of water and filled my drink. I swished an ice cube around in my mouth and he sat forward.
So that's it? We're just going to pretend like we have nothing to talk about?
You mean your engagement? He shook his head.
No, I meant you. What happened to you having to get the hell out of here?
I'm still planning on leaving. He licked his lips.
When?
Soon. I don't know. My dad's gone, and Joe hasn't even graduated yet. I can't just leave them. I'm working and saving my money.
The sleeping old man from the couch was now up and moving, searching through a basket of potato chip bags on the counter under the TV closest to us.
Soon, huh?
Shia asked. I was so annoyed that I felt like my anger was going to stain the upholstered chair under me with blotchy black streaks. What's your problem? Why are you starting shit with me?
I'm not. I'm just wondering why you've changed your whole plan around, and now what? You're looking at whatever base John's going to be stationed at?
His response reminded me of his speech right before I was supposed to meet him last fall. Winter had come since, and now we were on the verge of spring.
Seriously, Meg, you're 19. You have so much time to do your own thing before you become a...
Stop! I held my hand up. Don't try to lecture me. You're engaged, Shia.
Why do you keep repeating that? Does that have something to do with you, Meg? I thought I was delusional and made us all up in my head. So if that's true, why do you keep bringing my engagement up?
He had me there. I didn't want to talk about the day we blew up whatever scraps of a relationship we had and now had this awkward, barely speaking faux-ship going on that scratched at my skin. I didn't want things to be so muddled between us. Arguing with Shia usually made me bloom with laughter and feel a little spark on the tip of my tongue. But as I sat here in the fancy club room in the luxurious Ritz-Carlton in the famous French Quarter in New Orleans, it felt like wading through a thick vat of maple syrup.
Oh, don't hold your tongue now, he said after we stared at each other for a minute.
The old man walked away with three bags of salt and pepper chips and a bottle of Coke tucked under his arm. I told a little seed of truth. I didn't say you were delusional. He laughed without a sound.
Yes, you did. You told Reader a really, really not true story about us. You've been telling yourself that same story?
He asked, but he wasn't asking. What was I supposed to say? I don't want any drama in our group. You shouldn't either, so I said what I needed to say to clear myself.
It's always about you, isn't it? And who's our group? No one talks to me while I'm gone. No one talks to John either, except me, and even that's not often. There doesn't have to be drama. I'm not River.
My pulse shot through the roof of the club room. Shia kept going.
I wouldn't have been pissed at you for not coming with me. That's your choice and your life. But it would have been nice if you could have just told me you weren't coming to the airport. I would have understood if you would have just told me. Been honest with me.
He cupped his hands together and moved them slowly. I thought I was being honest. I thought I could be like Joe for once and just jump on a plane and leave without a plan. In a flat voice, he said,
"We had a plan. It was literally a planned trip with my dad's foundation."
You know what I mean. His sarcastic semantics weren't going to get us anywhere. I'm sorry I didn't tell you. I remembered just how hard I left him hanging. Until you landed.
I'm not mad. Well, 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 look who it is.
John suddenly exclaimed by our side, patting Shia on the back. His hair was wet, so he must have showered, but he couldn't have worked out so fast. And just like that, they were bros and hugging, and their smiles were so big and so fake, I could spot the insincerity a mile away.
30. Joe. When Beth walked back into the kitchen, the color was drained from her face. On her heels were two men in army uniform. Meredith dropped to her knees before they spoke. Beth rushed toward her. I felt like my socks were rooted into the ground. I couldn't move as chaos erupted in the room. My mom was screaming, but the voices of the men broke through it.
Meredith, Meredith, it's just an injury. I only came because Frank is my friend. I'm sorry to have frightened you, the taller man yelled.
My dad's supposed friend looked like he wanted to get the hell out of Dodge. His cheeks were so red, and the newspapers from the counter were all over the floor.
Where is he? Where's my husband? Meredith demanded.
The other man took a step forward, and his boot covered a picture of a homecoming ceremony for the scout platoon who came home last week.
Germany. He's at a hospital there while he gains his strength to come home.
Germany? Beth asked. I told her that most injured soldiers end up in Germany before coming home to the U.S. Beth wrapped something around my mom's shoulders, and I felt like we were on an episode of True Life or something. It all felt like it wasn't really happening to us. It felt like an article on the internet. I read once that by watching too many documentaries and Facebook videos, you can become desensitized to violence in front of you in real time because your brain and memory are not able to tell the difference from watching it happen virtually. The room spun a little until my mom calmed down. Beth got my mom to sit in Dad's recliner with a cup of something that smelled a little stronger than coffee. Beth called Aunt Hannah and our grandparents. 20 minutes beforehand, I was rummaging through old newspapers in my room upstairs. I was listening to music and searching through page after page of homecoming ceremony coverage. I wasn't even sure what I was doing with them yet, but I knew Lori had a plan when he gave me a list of names to search for. It suddenly seemed incredibly unimportant as my mom's shoulders were shaking under the blanket wrapped around her. Aunt Hannah showed up 30 minutes later, and Amy came home from her friend's house and wouldn't stop asking Meredith what was wrong until she got yelled at. Beth stared at the wall, and I stared at my computer. Aunt Hannah was just sitting on the couch, staring blankly at the TV on the wall. The mess of cords hanging from the wall and wrapped around the extension cord screamed, "House fire!" But there were just so many things to plug in.
"Have you talked to Meg yet?" Meredith asked when Aunt Hannah brought her another drink.
I didn't even have a mental comment on her drinking. I had no right to question her in that moment. I even craved a drink, and I hated the taste of alcohol. The only thing we knew was that my dad's tank ran over an IED on the side of the road and caught fire. Out of 4 men, my dad was one of 2 survivors. One of the men killed had just had a baby halfway through the deployment. It didn't seem fair. But I couldn't speak the word fair since my dad was alive. The men who came bearing the news told my mom that she could go to Germany and stay with my dad until he healed, and she said she would have to see if she could. Beth and I stood in the kitchen with Aunt Hannah and went over our options if Meredith decided to go. I can drive Amy to her stuff and myself to work, I offered. I just need to go get my license. I can go Monday. Aunt Hannah peeked into the living room and came back to stand by the oven, which she turned off. It was on from when Beth and my mom were making breakfast, which seemed like another lifetime.
I can stay most nights, but I work 5 days a week, Aunt Hannah told me.
Beth nodded and wiped a chunk of brown hair from her forehead.
I can help out as much as I can.
Amy's the only one who can't take care of herself, I said, just as Amy came walking into the kitchen.
I can take care of myself just fine, Joe.
Her tone was harsh, but I didn't blame her. We had all had a long day, and no one had heard from Meg yet. I considered calling Shia or emailing John, but I didn't know how much of a mess that could make. Anyway, Beth opened the fridge and poured Amy a glass of milk. Beth grabbed a pack of Oreos and slid them across the table. For once in her life, Amy shook her head at the cookies.
So, Joe, you'll need to take that test this week. How many shifts do you work this week? Beth asked.
I didn't know off the top of my head, and I told my sisters and my aunt that I would tell them when I knew. I leaned my elbows against the cold counter and felt the room shifting, and our lives changing with every passing breath.
31. Meg. John sat down next to me with a 20-ounce Coke in his hand and a plate of salad and little sausages smothered in sauce that looked like dark gravy.
"What have you two been up to all day?"
he asked Shia and me, swiping a forked crouton through a puddle of ranch. Shia looked at me a moment, like he was waiting on me to reply to John first. I wanted him to do the same. "I was walking around the quarter a bit. Couldn't sleep," I said. I wound my hair around my hand and stared at my water glass. Water had collected in little pearl-like beads all over the side of it, and I ran my finger over the moisture, drawing little lines with my nail. Even the water glasses at the Ritz weren't just plain glasses. They were more like crystal goblets carved with unique patterns. I quickly ran through my morning and ended with, "And I got these," lifting the bag of pralines from the floor. "They are so good. I got a few of them," I smiled, and John chewed his food. I sat the bag back down on the floor by my feet. John half covered his mouth and said,
"Cool, the things with the nuts? The shop is cool, though. It's like Mexican or something."
Shia coughed, or choked. I wasn't sure. How John gathered that assumption, I would never know, but I thought it was pretty basic knowledge that the French Quarter wasn't historically tied to Mexico. The Spanish, yes. Mexico, no. Then again, I couldn't tell you where Spain was on a map. I knew it was part of Europe, sure. "They're Creole. Do you want one?" I asked Shia without looking at him, but felt his eyes hot on my face. Shia thanked me and asked for a chocolate praline, which I knew was meant to goad me.
"What?"
he asked with a grin, knowing I couldn't say a word in front of John. It felt a little too Nicholas Sparks for us to have met up at the same praline shop where we met for the first time. If I was the extreme hopeless romantic that Joe always said I was, I would have believed that running into him in Aunt Sally's would have been some magical fate marker that meant we were destined to run off into the sunset together. But I wasn't that much of a sap. Only like half as much as Joe made me out to be, at most. John shook his head when I handed Shia the wrapped praline, chewing his food with his mouth not quite closed.
"You two are into the sweet stuff. Gross."
"Hmm," was the noise that came from my mouth. Shia looked like he wanted to say something, thought it out, his eyes looking up at the ceiling and all, but didn't say whatever made him pause. He sat back against his chair. A few seconds passed, and he casually asked,
"So, what's on the plan today? How's it feel to be back into the real world?"
John ran his hand over his smooth chin. He laughed.
"It's weird, for sure. Mostly because I get to wear normal clothes." His fingers plucked at his polo shirt. "For the day. I don't know. Meg planned the day, I think. Right, Meg?"
John looked to me. "Say what?" I was under the impression that he was planning the whole weekend. In fact, I specifically remember John Brooks' sleepy voice cooing over the phone.
"Don't worry about anything, baby. It's my treat to you. Just walk out to the car. That's all you need to do." "Right?"
he asked again. And while I was watching him gnaw on a ranch-smothered crouton, something shiny fell from his shoulders and disappeared into the stuffy air, leaving him a touch less colorful than he was in my memory. "I didn't plan anything, actually," I said slowly, and I felt so awkward and didn't know why exactly. "But I figure there's plenty of stuff we can find last minute, even if we just walk around or whatever. There's always something to do. We could do a ghost tour like we did with Reader and them, remember?" I looked at John, and Shia looked at me, and I looked at the table. "We're staying smack in the middle of the quarter. There's plenty to do."
"Oh, yeah. That's cool with me, babe."
John lifted his hip to pull his cell phone out of his back pocket.
"Whatever you want to do is cool with me."
I nodded at him, smiling. He smiled back, but only a little, and then he looked down at his phone in his hand. He had a brand new iPhone, and it took pictures like a professional camera. It was like a little computer in his hand. I wanted one so bad, but they were so freaking expensive, and Amy was already racking up the data bill on our plan so much that Meredith threatened to take her phone away every month. I couldn't add an expense and listen to my three younger sisters bitch about it. Amy didn't understand that I actually worked for most everything outside of the basics. "Cool," I lamely responded. It confused me to no end why sitting at the table with Shia and John felt worse than when I was 17 and had to get my wisdom teeth cut out.
"Hmph."
Shia made the quiet noise from his throat, breaking up the silence for a second. I wondered what he was thinking about, but wasn't about to ask him. That whole situation was pretty awkward. It bothered me that I looked like an idiot in front of not only Shia King, but to John Brooke. I must have looked like I didn't put any thought into our time together. If I had known I was supposed to plan a romantic freaking getaway, I would have scheduled couples massages at the spa inside the Ritz. I would have pre-ordered breakfast in bed with strawberries and champagne. John was 21, they would have let us. I would have planned the most perfect couples retreat weekend just like I helped Mrs. King plan for a trip to Atlanta with Mr. King. They got $400 massages at the top-rated spa in Buckhead, and Mrs. King got a sugar scrub. When I booked it, I added the complimentary hour in the couples room. I didn't even have the chance to be that thoughtful for us because I thought John was in charge of everything. I had been looking forward to this weekend for so long, but now it felt messy and completely done on a whim. Where it had once all seemed so planned and organized, it now felt like no actual thought beyond booking a bed for us to sleep in had been done. John's time mattered to me, and I wanted him to feel that. Wasn't that the point of dating someone? To show them how good of a wife I would be? That was my point anyway. I wasn't sure John had a point. If I were honest, I'd admit also that I wanted Shia to recognize my devotion to John. I wanted him to see it in his face like I saw Belle Gardner's emerald flashing on her dainty finger. I could have used a hit of revenge. The sticky sweet high of having control over the situation is like nothing else. No orgasm, not a slice of devil's food cake still warm from the oven. Not even the poreless satin skin I had after using foundation primer for the first time could ever compare to the feeling of having the upper hand. With River, I never felt in control of our dynamic. From the first sloppy kiss during a game of 7 minutes in heaven that I didn't even want to play, to the first time we had sex, awkwardly, in the back of his car, he was always in charge. And it felt like something was constantly floating over my head when I was with him. I didn't know if it was the pressure of staying relevant to him and his group of friends, but something was always over my head, keeping me eager to be the wild girl, the girl who would lift her shirt at a party or blow River in one of his friends' rooms during a rager. River told me how beautiful I was until he took my virginity in the back seat of his 1991 Lumina and asked for pictures of my tits. Then I became an object, and the comments about my beautiful big eyes changed into comments about my big breasts and ass, and I never heard the word beautiful again. I didn't miss it at the time, though. Honestly, I lived for the sexual power I had over him. It's that feeling that I loved so much. River didn't care about me, not really. Not as much as he cared about being the cool guy with the naked pictures of Meg Spring. There was even a rumor that he was making guys in our school pay him $10 for them. The girls got them for free, to pick me apart, to call me names and criticize every part of my body, from my pepperoni nipples to the stretch marks on the tops of my thighs. The girls at my old school were worse even than the guys. At least the guys' comments weren't negative. River was careless and thoughtless, and John was supposed to be the opposite of that. I was in control, holding the better cards, and if Shia knew I was happy with John Brooke, maybe it would make me feel better about him and Belle. Such was my illogical logic at 19. With every week out of high school, I felt like I was getting to know myself more and more. I found out things about myself every day, like new foods, different ways I could appreciate my life. Joe said I always took power too.